And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
I'm Andy.
And we're 4-0.
We are. Our strains, confident, quietly confident, modest. Debbie thinks under wrap 4-0, but we are 4-0.
I know. It's. I'm almost not quite certain how to deal with it. I mean, luckily the media, other than the AFL running a poll about can Richmond win the flag, which is one of the worst bits of clickbait I've seen for a while. No, I think there's a real effort being made to pump the brakes, notwithstanding West Coast being a genuinely good team this year. But yeah, it's been better than I expected.
It has been. So, Nick, we follow a lot of sports outside AFL, and, we listen to them on podcast network, which appeals to people like us, if you haven't worked that up already, regular listener, but we both have, university degrees with as well heavy degree of statistics, and, there has been a lot of advanced metrics that's gone into sport these days and, has also been included into Richmond. But sort of one of the recent evolutions, and this is one of the hardest things to sell to someone who doesn't like, who isn't sort of into the current movement of advanced metrics, is that close games are random. That is one of the hardest things. If you're going to sell this to a non-advanced sport metrics lover, the close games of random argument is hard. Like people, that is one of the hardest things. And because professional sportsmen love it. And, if you know it yourself, you played in close games. It is it's a lovely myth to believe that in.
Winning a close game, there are a few things more emotional and fun.
Absolutely. But making the intellectual leap to that might have been emotional and fun, but actually might have been a bit lucky is hard, and particularly hard if that is what you spent all your 20s doing is play professional sport. So that's the argument.
I think it's perfectly reasonable that professional sportsmen should enjoy the moment when they get a big win.
And fans should too. Analytically,
take it with a grain of salt.
Well, analytically, the important thing is the difference that separates good teams from mediocre teams is good teams make less games close because they kick the crap out of bad teams. It's not the difference, the sustainable difference in sport for good teams is not that they win close games, it's that they make less games close because they beat up bad teams. And that, to me, is the hot take from the Brisbane game. Is that we played a mediocre team and we beat them up and we didn't let it become close.
No, look, there were moments where the game wasn't as, I think at halftime we would have all hoped for a 60 to 70 point win, but Brisbane are a bit better than that, and as we said last week, their form leading in was pretty reasonable, but it wasn't great, and For whatever reason, and I've been thinking about this a bit without any great insight to come of it, but Dim's never lost to a Brisbane team. That's through three different coaches, a whole raft of different players, and they haven't been good in that time frame. But you would think that even them not being very good, they would have chanced to win at some stage. But for whatever reason, the wide open spaces of the Gabba suit us very nicely. We've traditionally played well there. We played well again. Yeah, I'm normally an emotional wreck in every game that we play, and this one I wouldn't say relaxed, but I wasn't as stressed as I normally am.
Well, in fairness, once you get to a 40-point margin, it's plus six goals. Is when statistically you become extremely likely to win a game, becomes well above 80%. We reached that moment about 5 to 6 minutes into the second quarter. Like, well, we did establish a fairly big lead fairly early, so...
Yeah, let's just say that I only really relax once we exceed the margin for the biggest comeback ever in that, you know, certain period of time.
And in support of your argument, should we make the finals, I will not relax probably at any stage in that game. But yeah, I see what you're saying. So,
do you want to talk about the final odds, the odds for us to make the finals, just quickly? Because
good point.
You know, for those of us who follow these things, which is clearly both of us. So, I just got back from an Easter holiday. When I left on the Easter holiday, about a bit over a week ago, we were $2.75 to make the finals, which for people who don't bet regularly, that's probably about a 35% chance. And when I got back from the holiday, we were $1.28, which is, I don't know, what's that, about a 75% chance to make the finals?
Yeah, and we should actually mention here that, Nick, you don't even own a gambling account. It's just you are interested in the probability.
Oh, no, I actually have an account. I never use it for betting, but I follow the odds semi-obsessively because for the information that it says about people's expectations about turns.
Because you like markets, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been this amazing confluence of having done as well as you could possibly expect, but also the teams who were considered, you know, in the same ballpark have had a pretty bad fortnight. I mean, Frank, I am among the people who have drawn a red line through Hawthorn, for instance, as a potential finals team for 2017, because there is no historical precedent for a team coming from this far back to make the finals.
Yeah, absolutely, and there've been multiple teams. Like, there's a lot of competing teams for us, like Collingwood, for instance, who are in the same ballpark as us, who have looked quite mediocre. So, while others have fallen down, we have looked strong, and you know, there's still a long way to go on that. But
oh yeah, absolutely.
But 4 points are worth the same in round four as they are in round 22. So we're backing a lot of good wins.
Yeah. And it's this way. Look, I hate this tendency to think of every week as a new referendum, because actually we are coming up on some very big games. But people saying, "Well, this is the biggest test the Tigers have had." Well, no, actually, West Coast are a notably better team than Melbourne. Melbourne are a good team, and we'll talk about them later. But we've taken care of business in a very tidy fashion, and you know that should not be overlooked in the search for a cheap narrative.
Okay, so we should talk about Brisbane in a second, but for me, in the first 4 weeks, the absolutely most exciting moment of football we've had is the third quarter of the West Coast game, which was a quarter we did not dominate, but we dominated the run of play, and that to me, that was the, you know, we stood toe-to-toe with a good football team, and it, you know, as we all know, the third quarter of the premiership quarter, when they were switched on, they were looking, they were engaged, and we outfought them in the third quarter. Mm. And that actually set up a win. We it was only a small victory on the scoreboard, but we dominated play, and it was quite a close game. You know, obviously the loss was wet, but you know, that to me was the most exciting, that we could play well against a good team.
Mm. Oh, definitely. Look, there has been a lot said and a lot written about the change in the Richmond game plan, and you know, we've said part of it. And I you know, perhaps flatter ourselves that we picked up on it a bit earlier than others, because it was apparent even from the pre-season that not necessarily the same personnel, but the same increase in efficiency from a more direct game style, from less kicking sideways, from less supporters wanting to kill themselves during a Richmond game.
Absolutely, and we picked it up. And, you know, we held back on it. Like, I've been holding back on it too, because I want to see sample size.
Which was the right thing to do.
Yeah, because it's not, you know, anyone can play football in my way for 2 weeks. It was the way you rebound when you counterattacked. And we still have, it still genuinely hasn't been challenged. But there was an article in The Age today that picked up on all the sort of basic stats about, you know, if you're following the stats, our possession counts is really down. So, by the way, that also means is that our key players aren't necessarily getting as many, many uncontested possessions, but our key players are also getting, have got high contested possessions and playing really well. But our possession count is down. It's the first time in the Denver era. Since we've had a decent team, this is the first time we're consistently losing the possession count, but we're winning the inside 50 count, we're winning the consistent possession count, or winning games with a very direct, long game plan. That's all true.
It's the first big step away from the Hawthorn DNA that, you know, Hawthorn have been able to win despite, by keeping it on the outside, by
ball control,
not, you know, Hawthorn have traditionally been sort of bottom five in the AFL in terms of tackles, but they've had good skills on the outside, and they've, you know, been able to control the game, play keepings off when they need to, and, you know, that style has been very effective for them. But, you know, we've had a big change in the assistant coach personnel, and we've had a change in style, and, you know, to date, it's working very well. I mean, you wouldn't guarantee that that's going to continue to be the case, because, you know, part of that success is relying on a trio of players who've played less than 50 games between the three of them, but, you know, so far it's working.
So far it's working well, the desire for hot takes in modern sporting analysis is probably, you should overanalyze. It's too early. It's four games, it's gone well. But you know, you still also have a longer term period of history to draw on. And, you know, where this becomes the exception or the norm, it still will be proven. But I mean, it's great to watch right now.
I'm
absolutely loving it. But, you know, we need to, how to react the first time we're knocked down, which does happen in AFL, we are going to have a bad game, is going to be what's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Look, do you want to talk about the Brisbane game in a bit more detail?
Oh, hang on, we played Brisbane this week, I can't remember. I mean, I just mainly wanted to talk about my obscure pro-wrestling references on Twitter, which essentially is a joke between you and I, because about two other people. You know, it's a sort of joke before, I think, where the WWE podcast with Richmond references rather than the other way around.
It's a niche audience. Look, it was a really interesting game in that, you know, some of the hallmarks of the first 3 weeks of the season weren't there, in that Dusty was well down.
Yep.
Chimp, what he did was good, but, you know, didn't win a ton of ball. I mean, Sean Grigg was by far our leading ball winner, which is curious. And
great game. I love Sean Grigg's game.
Oh yeah, definitely. I do get annoyed at people saying, "Oh, he's taking his game to another level." No, I don't think so. I think he's been a good but not great player for quite a while.
Your narrative about the fans don't know how to deal with the decent but not terrible, not great player, just decent player. Like, I very much, I was quoting that on Sunday with a guy, a guy I was watching the football with, a good friend of the podcast. But, like, statistically, he did actually genuinely have one of these sort of, in the top 10% of his games.
It was a good game.
Yeah. I mean, he had 11 contested possessions, which is high for him. 586 metres games, which is great. 11 score involvements. All of that is high for him. But, Mm. I mean, I was really happy because he's, as we point out, he's had a great season, and yeah, I mean, his credibility is an all time high, I think, with Tigers supporters, and much deserved.
Oh yeah, he's had a great year. Look, you know, talking of credibility with Tiger supporters, you know, you're almost at the stage where you're taking Dean Rioli's brilliance for granted. That Dean Butler's gonna play well. George Castagna kicked 4 goals. Like, I haven't gone through every single game he played with juniors, because I did check, and as a 16-year-old, he did actually start off as a half-forward flanker for the Northern Knights and was okay, but as a goal kicker. But he's kicking more goals in the AFL than he ever did either in the VFL or the TAC Cup, which is no small thing, and frankly, another deeply enjoyable part of the season.
Yeah, so you can actually make a case. I tweeted something along those lines. I don't necessarily believe it, because I think the other two are probably getting the better defenders. But you can actually make a case that George is best of the three of the Mosquito fleet right now. He's, you know, his possession count is the highest of the three. His tackles are the highest of the three. And he's kicking plenty of goals. And you know, that was a really interesting game. So he remains the most intriguing of the prospects, because like you don't know, like you actually don't know whether
you really don't know. He's really good at set shots for goal. He's pretty crap at when he's running at full pace and he kicks it. His skills are not particularly good. Whereas Danny Rioli doesn't win all the ball all that much, but what he does do is silk. Like, there's not so much the highs and the lows.
I mean, Danny Rioli statistically arguably is the worst of the three, but he's the one, you know, with that barring major injury, will play 200 games. Where
if I had to pick one of them to keep on the list for the next 10 years, it would be Danny Rioli, no question. I did a bit of research, actually, because I was thinking about, well, small forward hasn't been a position of strength for us historically. How did we get here? And so it turns out that we drafted the player who generated the most pressure acts in the under-18 carnival as a forward 2 years in a row. 1 year it was Dan Butler, the next year it was Danny Rioli. And the curious thing is that we clearly, at draft night last year, we didn't really know quite what we had, because we went out and drafted Shai Bolton and Tyson Stengel, two young kids who...
The next year.
Both have shown promise in the preseason, but, you know, we didn't know we had these three guys who were...
Absolutely not.
Back on AFL football. Otherwise, we wouldn't have drafted these two new guys, because Tyson Stengel has had a very impressive start to his career. Look, you never say no to having more talent, but yeah, it's curious.
It is. I don't think. I mean, I'd love to believe it was the case. We may have been slightly lucky, as we had a weakness, so we overinvested in a position, and then that position turned out to be incredibly important in modern AFL.
Part of it.
And we actually
drafting in the hope that you hit, and then suddenly we did.
We hit multiple times, and we hit multiple times on a position that suddenly became more important, and we hit multiple times in the type of player that's perfect for the modern game in that position. So, you know, obviously things are wrong. Yep. I mean,
it's a mixture of luck and skill.
It is, and we probably, you know, arguably are self-inflicted, but we hadn't had a great draft in this conversation for another time, but we did a lot of stupid stuff, and we also got a bit unlucky with a few others on a few other draft picks. So it was nice to have one go the other way on us. Anyway, we haven't barely talked about the Brisbane game at all, so let's talk about a few other uh, of the players. I want to talk a bit about McIntosh. I'm still on McIntosh Island. You look at his second efforts. You look at what he brings to the game. I still think he's
and he had a good game as well. Like the biggest question about with him is the quality of his disposal, and this was an above average game for him. When he lowers his eyes and hits a guy on the lead, he's very good. He's got a nice long kick on him. It's sort of the kicks in between that cause a bit of damage. But, yeah, I enjoyed his game. I thought he was part of a midfield that applied consistent pressure. I thought Dion Pressier, actually, again, his left foot kicking isn't very good.
But right foot.
Again, his pressure is consistently good, so sort of cut him a bit of a break. But yeah, the whole team is doing a good job of putting the other team under a lot more duress when they kick the ball, which they haven't done before. And yeah, I enjoy that.
So on Champion Data sort of team rankings, he was the third best Richmond player. Actually, it wasn't the best. It was like the eighth best on the ground because Brisbane have a lot of statistical champions who I suspect never see their opponents during the game. But Presti was sort of an interesting one to me. I felt it was really time for him to produce. He didn't completely disappoint. So he's our third best player, champion data wise. But he was okay.
He works hard both ways, which I appreciate.
And Dimon makes that point when he talks about it. When Dimon talks about game plan, I think his pants are on fire, but I think when he talks about individuals, he speaks some truth. And he does talk that Prestia burns up the GPS defensively. So that is a point in his defense for, I know a lot of fans are down on him right now. And Nick, I want to transition to last week. We talked about the fact that Jack's game was rated low. And a lot of people whose opinion I respect on the internet are saying he's not moving as freely. I want to watch him behind play. But, and the people who, as I said, I respect and who's I listen to, but look, I can't see him. He's in the latter part of his career. He was never going to be as sprightly as he was when he's 22. But you know what? He looks pretty good to me once you take that into account.
Yeah, he does. And look, he has always been a bit prone to yips with his goal kicking, and he hasn't started off the season in particularly good form with his goal kicking. But yeah, he looked good on Sunday, and yeah, I'm not at all worried about his potential to provide pretty solid service over the rest of the season. Todd, again, we had another workmanlike effort, but, you know, there's absence makes the heart grow fonder, and that's happened for me with Ben Griffiths.
So a few things about Todd Elton. Firstly, his 13 possessions. It was 13, wasn't it? Yeah, it was 13.
Yeah.
He's more than Griff gets regularly, so good for him. Secondly, he's an appalling kick for goal. Thirdly, when Stephen Marsden, who kicked the crap out of both our Ruckman, when the opposite...
He looked great.
When the opposite Richmond sticks their knee in your chest and you finish the rock contest with your arms windmilling in the air as you fall backwards, as it happened to Elton, as a former ruckman, it's fair to say that that's not good sign. No, that's, you know, it's hard to come back from that emotionally and physically. But he's not awful. Like, a few times he contested down the line, like, you're sort of, you know, not everything in that second ruck roll was measured by what you can see on footy-wise statistics, and he did get up and contest a few times, and that's what we actually need. And there was a couple of moments in the game when Prestia was competing against two lines, and you need, that's Elton's job. Elton's job is to be down the line, create the contest, bring the ball to go up ground. And a couple of times he did that, okay. So, again, like I'd love to have the hipster contrarian argument that he's been playing quite well. But as far as all I can do on the hipster contrarian argument is he's not awful. He's just probably, he's a 4 out of 10 at best. But he's not, he's not a 2 out of 10.
No, he could be better, I think is the...
Well, that's a whole take, yeah. But yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm, you know, he did, his work rate was reasonably high, which is the best thing that could be said about it. There's a gap there, and I expect that the second key forward position is going to be a priority. And do you want to talk about Josh Shackey now or later?
Interesting, because a few fans didn't like him because fans never like second-year forwards. But what did you think?
I really... I'm loath to make the comparison, but one of the strengths of Ty Vickery was that... he was a beautiful shot for goal, and he has the same gun barrel straight mechanics when he kicks the ball. Look, he got rubbish disposal. It's genuinely hard to make a judgment. He's not a super explosive, and if you put my hand on my heart, I would say that. Oh, look, I'd maybe prefer Eric Hipwood, but of the two Lions key forwards. But Josh Shackey is going to be, I think he's going to be a very good player. So I'm quite happy that we're chasing him. Sadly, our two first round draft picks are looking a bit worse than they did at the start of the season. But maybe that's an influenza problem. But yeah, I'm still pretty okay to be chasing him.
Yeah, fair enough. I agree with everything you said. So Nank, I don't think we need to overanalyze it, but the difference between his fantasy football output and his actual value of an AFL player is there's a little bit of a gap there, but
A little bit of a gap. I don't think we should take for granted the quality of his disposal and his, you know, general movements as a human being.
As ability, I mean, I was somewhat disappointed with the Roman Reigns Nank Spear reference. essentially, no one on Twitter got except for you, Nick. But he's putting the smack down. But we are 18th in the AFL and can hit our differential, and that is for a reason. So.
Yeah, he gets beaten in tap outs. He is good at, when he does get a tap out, he's good at directing to a teammate. The quality of his disposal is generally good. He's kicking goals at a pretty reasonable rate. His contested marking is good. But there are a number of positives. It's sort of calibrating at an appropriate level.
The scoring for the stoppages was 46 to 10. In our favour. So, like, why that's happening is because, I love Nank, don't get me wrong, but I think we need to keep it in context.
Yeah. Another week on the Reece Conqueror revival?
Yeah, when at 100% with his disposal technique. Still not. He's holding the ball that led to a goal was not 100% his fault.
That was as much not having a target.
But it's funny because commentators are starting to talk about us like we're a good team. And Conker's getting the love, everyone's getting the love. Yeah, so it's sort of interesting looking at their change in attitude. The next 2 weeks will be fascinating for Reece Conker's popularity. There was one guy before we move on, Nick, Mandy, Scalar, talking about. don't quite know how I felt about him being brought into the team. You know, another sort of utility guy who might be best off the halfback flank because we only have 15 of them in the team already. So Keith Russell goal, only 9 touches. I'm sort of, it felt like, well, I spoke to someone who was at the game in Brisbane. He played by far the least amount of game time of any Tiger player. He only had 67%, and that was by considerable distance the least time anyone played on the ground. Feel like we didn't quite know what to do with him.
No, and look, I took it actually as a bit of a defensive measure because we were worried that, you know, Brisbane, pretty young, quick team, we needed a bit more speed on the outside. And
Dimmer, when he's in there, when he's sort of got a, he's got a 50-50 decision to go with a defensive option. He must have just been having an off day to sort of default to defence anyway. So go on.
It is frustrating. And look, did you we said on the show last week that we were pretty big fans of Ben Lennon's work, but have you seen his highlights from the VFL?
I have them. Good transition. I was going to do the same thing. Not as many Joe the Gooses. I was like, also goal goals as I expected. Mm. But I mean, God, it was, you went by 2.
So look, the big takeaway. Look, and I'll get to this quickly. But there isn't actually very much you can take away from the VFL this week because North Ballarat are a joke. Partly because the AFL cares almost nothing about senior competitions other than the AFL around the country. But hats off to them to the extent that they've invested in AusKick, which has been a big success. But I know from personal experience, from being involved with an amateur club, that they just do not care about amateur clubs, despite them sort of being the lifeblood of the community. And you're really seeing that with North Ballarat. They are not competitive at all.
Yeah.
Look,
interesting conversation on Bigfooty about some Coburg people as well, because there are a lot of Coburg people who contribute to the Richmond board and the sort of, they were a good team last year, added to the VFL, and a lot of angst about that because they've obviously fallen there.
Yeah. And look, the big thing I took away was that Ben Lennon converted a lot of shots from 45 to 50 metres, which is not an easy shot goal. And his marking was really confident as well. And we said it last week that he hasn't perhaps got that confidence at senior AFL level yet, but the talent is there. And notwithstanding the substandard quality of the opposition, I don't think Menadue made a particular case that he's a better candidate for the position than Lennon is.
They need to decide, but they've sort of had a problem all year that they haven't really known what to do with that position. And they're sort of, it's been a bit of a shag in our position unless we've had an injury. I don't know what they're going to do with it this week.
Look, it's a problem of affluence that you don't know quite what to do with your 22nd best player, but they haven't got it right.
I worry in a game where we're playing a good opposition that we'll struggle to kick goals. It's a theory rather than a proven fact, but yeah.
Look, if it was Griffiths and Lennon this week for Menadue and Elton, I'd be perfectly happy with that.
Yeah, but, it's hard to call now. You bought Menadue in, you've got to find a role for him.
You've got to win football games. That's true.
You're exactly right. I do actually agree with you. Just talking about Menadue individually, and that's a lot of games now with load where he's had a low possession count. He needs to find the football.
Mm.
Anyway, is there anything else about the VFL you want to comment on? Because it's really
Lloyd and Miles continue to be in good form, but yeah, it was a flogging. There wasn't a great deal. And in terms of the non-Todd Elton alternatives, none of them really put their hands up. So, you know, it's pretty much status quo.
So, intelligent football watcher, whose name will go unnamed by his request, said that it's a bit unfortunate we're playing Melbourne at its grand final this week.
Yeah, there's a... Melbourne are a... I'm a little bit jealous of Melbourne in some ways. Like, if Clayton Oliver was a Richmond player, we'd pretty much have named the podcaster after him. Like, he's that good a prospect. Christian Petrarca's also a great young player. Like, they've got a bunch of good young prospects, even some ones like Neil Bullen, Jaden Hunt. Jake Viney's a pretty big name, but they've got a bunch of good young players. But their form has been good, but not great. They're a very solid test of where we are.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the Monday night before Anzac Day. It's interesting, man.
Yeah, I quite like the timing actually. It's you've got a Anzac Day's still the big day, but you know, it's been a pretty inconsequential one for some time. But you know, hopefully we can put our bit of a stamp on this game. Melbourne are a really good team in terms of they are gonna test our capacity on relatively low possession, high efficiency football, because they are the number one team in the AFL for kicks, marks, disposals, uncontested possession. So they win a ton of football. Now, they're not always the most effective team when it comes to actually converting that into marks, goals, and wins, but you know, they're a reasonably deep team. They're missing Max Gorn, which I'm extremely pleased about, because
huge difference.
Yeah, and you know, according to Champion Data, he was clearly the elite ruckman in the league last year. And you know, if you're a Melbourne supporter, you'd be pretty worried. You know, two knee reconstructions, now a reasonably serious hamstring injury. So you know, you wouldn't take it for granted. But Tom Hogan's back this week. Like, they are far from a pushover.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll be a really interesting game. And, you know, I think most Tigers supporters are aware they've had the wood on this in recent years. Well, if you've talked
for a couple of years. Yeah, interestingly, 2 weeks ago, they were 12.5-point favourites. We're now 5.5-point favourites, but I think it would be reasonable to think of it as a 50-50 game.
Yeah, that's probably a bit pessimistic. That's your Richmond supporter talking. But,
I'm doing so badly in footy tipping this year due to my natural pessimism.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those games where I do distinctly remember before the game, the Brisbane game, I sat down with a long-suffering Tigers supporter, and we both sort of agreed we completely expect to lose this game. We wouldn't be surprised if we did. And that is against the Brisbane team that, when you watch it objectively, like, you can see it when you watch them, they're crap. They're not a good football team.
We haven't lost to Brisbane this decade.
And you can truly see when you watch them that they are going to finish in the bottom three. Objectively, we should take care of Melbourne, but yeah, you know, we're of course terrified.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.